What we want to do is relegate health insurance to the same position as all the other insurances, which is where it belongs, for emergencies, for catastrophic events. If your, you know, homeowner's insurance policy dictated to you, you know, what kind of appliances you could put in your own home that you own, right? If your auto insurance policy dictated to you which car, which tires you can put in your car, or which mechanics you can go visit, right, for a tune-up, that would be ridiculous.
Everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. This is Gavin Ward, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. In today's episode, I sat down with Gary Frazier, healthcare executive and founder of Ohm Healthcare, a platform that's going to give healthcare consumers, like everyone listening, healthcare access and price transparency, perhaps the first of its kind platform here in the United States and even the world. Gary talks about how price transparency and the ability to be healthcare literate has helped him and his own family, and he's hoping this new platform will give everyone the ability to know what prices are ahead of time and keep healthcare affordable. Gary's launching his platform this year in 2018 with his first partners, which we'll talk about here on the show. Who knows, maybe in the future this will be the norm in healthcare. We hope you enjoy today's show, and if you do, feel free to leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Thanks everyone, and enjoy the show. Gary, tell us something about you that might surprise folks in healthcare. Maybe even your colleagues don't know about you.
So something about me would be that I am a certified Kansas City Barbecue Society judge. I've been judging barbecue competitions since 2010. And I also have been trained, not just as a judge, but also as a smoker. So I actually flew to Louisiana for a two-day training with Johnny Trigg, who's a pit master.
So has this guy been on TV?
Yes, he's been on TV, Food Network, and he's won a bunch of competitions. And so anyway, the point is that I love smoking meat.
Nice. Do you have one in your backyard? Or
one, I got like five different grills.
Okay, so you host. I'm guessing you host get-togethers.
I do, but you know, if you know anything about smoking meat, it takes hours, and that's just the smoking part, let alone the prep part. And so I probably do it four times a year, one of which is for my church. I'll do like a service auction where people basically bid to come to the dinner.
Nice, man.
And so we get about 12 people come to that, and so it's a full-blown. It's either a brisket. You know, ribs are kind of easy. They're kind of the run-of-the-mill because they're easy. But I try to do something harder, like a brisket or a pork butt or something that takes, you know, 10, 12 hours to do.
Nice, man. So without naming names, there's a bunch of barbecue joints out there, some chains. How do those compare to Gary's?
Well, not just to Gary's. Very few chains, if any, actually compare to competition barbecue.
Okay.
So I can't go to a chain and eat. Once you become a judge, you can't go to a chain and enjoy yourself.
Oh, man. So if you had to pick a barbecue place to go, could you name it?
You know, there's a place in Compton, actually. This is a suburb of Los Angeles. If you're not from Los Angeles, Compton as in straight out of Compton.
Yeah.
Called Bledsoe's.
Okay. Any relation to the football?
No. But they've been a hole in the wall kind of place for years. And they only make so much, which is what makes it good. You know, you can only make so much and actually maintain quality, right? And so when they run out of a particular meat, whether it's ribs, chicken, brisket, it's done. You're done. And so people come from all over the place, from Orange County and other places, and stand in line to have some Bledsoe's. And so it's on Long Beach Boulevard.
Okay.
You know, so anyway, that's my plug. I don't know those people. In other words, I'm not friends with them. I don't know them personally.
Yeah.
I just know that if there's a place that I wanted to go and get some really good meat, you know, that's a place I can go.
Nice. Well, I'm actually around that area pretty regularly, so I'm going to remember that and have to check it out. Are they open on Sundays by chance?
Ooh, that's a good question, man. You know, a lot of people, you know, close on Sundays for religious reasons.
Yeah.
Still, even in L.A.
Yeah.
I think they are open. There's another place, I'll tell you, if that one's closed, on Artesia. This is in Long Beach, called Robert Earl's.
Okay.
So those are the two places, those are the only two places that's local to me where I will go and buy ribs.
Nice. Well, a couple plugs there for those barbecue joints. Cool. Now, you say close to you. Are you based out here in the L.A. area?
Yeah. Born and raised in L.A. Area, so Compton. Okay. You know, back to that. My parents actually graduated from Compton High School.
Oh, nice.
So did all my uncles and aunts and stuff. So I'm born and raised in Compton. I live in Long Beach, which is adjacent to Compton.
Okay.
And I've gone to school, college, locally, as well as I graduated from UC Irvine, which is Orange County. So
okay.
My stomping grounds is Southern California.
Okay, awesome. Cool. So tell us, you grew up in Compton. How did you end up getting into healthcare? Did you think growing up you're going to be in healthcare? Tell us about that.
No. Growing up, I knew I wanted to be in business, you know, which is why I went to get an MBA and everything else. But the healthcare piece didn't come until I was recruited out of business school.
Okay.
By several companies were recruiting me, not all healthcare, traditional, you know, banking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But one of them was a healthcare real estate company called Hammes Company.
Hammes Company, okay.
Yeah, spelled H-A-M-M-E-S. And I'm spelling it because sometimes people will say Hamas,
oh, yeah.
You know, like the terrorist group.
Yep.
And I'm like, no, not Hamas. It's Hammes,
okay.
As in John Hammes is his name.
Got
anyway,
it.
Point is that they recruited me for their L.A. or California office.
Okay.
And that was my first ever healthcare job. And it was purely healthcare real estate, which is building hospitals and medical office buildings and doing expansions and stuff. And I was their business development guy.
Okay, cool. So you kind of ended up there out of college. I know just talking with you off mic, you worked with one of the largest health systems here in the U.S., Dignity Health. Tell us about your transition to Dignity and I guess where you are today.
Yeah, so the transition was doing healthcare real estate meant that the hospitals weren't building buildings for the sake of building buildings. They were building whatever they were building because it would help them fulfill a strategy,
okay.
A business strategy. So if you were to be a good business development executive, what you needed to be able to do was understand hospital strategy.
Okay.
And to talk to the C-suite of that hospital system that I was calling on in Arizona, Nevada, and Southern California. And so over the 4 years I was at Hammes, I learned quite a bit about hospital strategy. I didn't jump right into talking about facilities. And what that did was help me to be able to, I'll say, parlay my hospital real estate experience into ultimately a hospital administrator job where I elected to go to then CHW. I was being interviewed actually at the time when I was planning to leave and go to a hospital system. I was being interviewed by a for-profit system,
okay.
That was in Riverside. And Dignity Health, or CHW, which was in Bakersfield. And so the choice was, do I want to drive hour and a half commute out to Riverside, or do I want to move my family to Bakersfield and live in Bakersfield in Central
wow.
California? I chose the Bakersfield route because the commute could kill you.
Yeah, I hear that. I know the commutes.
Yeah.
And that was before podcasts and things like that, less to listen to and occupy your time.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right. That's right. So that's what happened. And I knew all the hospital CEOs. I mean, by that time, you know, I knew all the hospital CEOs and chief executives across the region to where I could make a phone call and, you know, tell them that I was interested in, you know, moving into the hospital administration space. And it worked out for me.
Good for you. Ohm Healthcare, how in the world did you go from working for a large health system with probably a lot of job opportunity or options to being an entrepreneur and going the Ohm Healthcare route? Tell us about that transition.
Yeah, so it's because of working in that environment that I decided I didn't want to work in that environment. And ultimately, as I say, necessity is the mother of invention, if you ever watch Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah, man, I lived that world for a very long time, lots of fits and starts, you know, where you come up with some pretty awesome strategies and integration and alignment strategies, and you do some good work for the hospital system or the local system. But a lot of times, you know, you don't see a lot of things coming to fruition because the powers that are above you, that's the CEO of a hospital, whoever your boss is, that kind of thing. You know, these are people that have been in the business a lot longer than I was. Their incentives, which is their pay, are aligned with, I'll say, maintaining the status quo a
yeah.
lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so if you're a young, go-getter, strategy, BD kind of person, and you're dreaming up some stuff that no one's thinking of yet, it's not exactly the right environment for you, you
yeah.
know? And so I was pretty successful. I mean, we bought a couple of surgery centers, a cancer center. We aligned ourselves and acquired a health plan that was local when I was in Bakersfield. And so we were competing against Kaiser, while at the same time, you know, we negotiated some deals with Kaiser that included volume guarantees. We're doing some great work, and I'm proud of that work.
Yeah.
But it was all still within the box.
Yep.
right?
Yeah.
And if I wanted to think outside the box, or if I did think outside the box, there just was never a budget for it. Because thinking outside the box meant that I was thinking about what was going to happen 5 to 10 years hence.
Yeah.
And our incentives did not allow us to go out that far, right? And then you lump in ACA, because that happened during the time, and all the other changes that came with that, and any demonstration projects that came out of CMS, whether it was bundle payments and the ACOs, all that stuff we were a part of, but it was all still in the box.
Right.
So how did I transition to OHM or open market healthcare? I don't know, as a person and as an executive, I just couldn't see myself staying in the box.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help myself. I kept thinking of all these other ways that the system could be better. And I knew that I was never going to get from here to there if I stayed on the corporate ladder that I was on, if that answers your question.
Yeah. So you're coming up with these great ideas in your head.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of guts. I mean, you go from stable job, good, doing well, to no revenue and starting a new business. So tell us how you got people together to help build this. And
you know, yeah. So I will tell you that I'm a little bit, so I have, I mean, I'm married, I've been married for going on 25 years. I have 3 kids.
Nice. Congrats, man.
Thanks. Yeah. And I can tell you that your wife would never let you just leave like that and jump ship. You have to be strategic with your spouse when it comes to career changes, as you do with anything else. So when I left Dignity, Bakersfield, to come back to Southern California, I went, instead of going to work for a hospital, I went to work for a consulting firm.
Okay.
So that's the transitional kind of job gig that allows me to still pay the mortgage and keep my wife happy.
Well said.
Right?
Nice.
But it also gives me so much flexibility, because now I'm traveling around the United States. Every project is a different project. People are valuing my expertise, you know, in all different facets, whether it's physician alignment, whether it's payer alignment, you know, you name it, right?
Yeah.
Ambulatory network development, all of the above. And so it gave me the freedom to both be, I'll say, employed, yep. right? Gainfully employed through a job. But at the same time, I controlled my own schedule to where I could start building a company on the side.
Yeah.
And so I did that in all of 2016.
Okay.
Where I was working and kind of developing OHM, so to say. 2017 came around and things got real, right? I had real traction.
Okay.
I had medical groups that were interested in participating. I had benefits brokers and consultants who wanted to figure out how I could modify it so they could include their employers in this kind of thing. And so it went from me doing business planning and strategizing, all the talking and all the irons I put in the fire started to come to fruition. People started to come to me and say, we want to do something. We want to make this manifest, okay. right? So by then I had switched jobs again, you know, because the jobs at that point was really about just paying my bills, and it wasn't about career ladder climbing, because I was already full bore into OHM. But I switched jobs to where I went to do mergers and acquisitions for a company here in LA called Paladin.
Okay.
And you may know Paladin because Paladin just bought Hahnemann University Hospital and St. Chris's Hospital in Philadelphia, downtown Philadelphia.
Okay.
$170 million from Tenet. So that was my deal.
Oh, nice.
And so when we got to the point where that deal was a sure thing, that's when I officially quit my job. And this was last year. It took us a full year just to negotiate and get through from LOI to the definitive documents, if you know mergers and acquisitions. But when we got to the stage where definitive documents were basically signed and it was just really about taking and tying in lawyers and stuff like that, I quit.
Okay.
This was last August. I left Paladin Health System, left the M&A job, told them, you know, we signed a separation agreement, all that stuff. Bottom line is, I said, I got to focus full time on OHM.
Yeah.
And they knew I was working on OHM when I came in.
Okay.
That's very how, transparent. By that time, I had to be transparent with any and everybody
yep.
that I got this thing I'm working on. It's my intellectual property. It's bigger than bricks and mortar hospitals and health systems. So I got to focus on it. Anyway, that's the trajectory that led me to ultimately leaving and launching off
cool.
into this stratosphere that we're in now.
So who's supporting you along this ride? Who are maybe some investors or partners of yours?
So without like actually naming people's names, the majority of my angel investors, these are individuals that have put in their own money, are doctors.
Okay.
Okay. Many of them are either from Chicago, affiliated with some major universities in Chicago, like UIC, University of Chicago. A couple of them are neurointerventionalists, neurosurgeons, and the like. I have some doctors that are here in California because this is where I hail from.
Yeah.
And there are also a couple of health plan executives, and I mean like health plan executives as members of BUCA.
Okay.
You know?
And what's BUCA for?
BUCA, for those who don't know, is it's an acronym for Blue Shield, United, Cigna, Aetna. They're the big four insurers in the country.
Okay.
So when I say BUCA, I mean they're part of some of the big, these are C-suite executives that are at the highest levels of some of those organizations, which is weird considering the fact that OHM Healthcare, being direct to consumer, ostensibly would eliminate or cannibalize, I'll say, some of the traditional insurance business.
Yeah, and you, sorry to interrupt you, Gary, and feel free to get to this question later, but you mentioned cannibalize some of the insurance business. I didn't mean to cut off your thought, but when you get a moment, tell us how you are not taking away all of insurance.
Yeah, so OHM, since we're just talking about OHM, OHM Healthcare, OHM stands for open market. OM is open market. That was my original name of the company.
Okay.
A friend of mine, after like 6 months in, pointed out to me that OM was OHM, which is the meditative sound that people make.
Is that why you pronounce it that way?
That's why I pronounce it that way and not just OM as an acronym because it sounds better. I mean, so from a branding perspective, it sounds better to say OHM than it does to say OM.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's more than an acronym, right? It's also the frequency of the universe, for those of you who don't know that. So anyway, OHM, open market healthcare, the concept is about creating a direct-to-consumer environment so that patients, who I call consumers, will have direct access to the majority of medical services without having to go through their insurance for it. When done this way, it eliminates the claims process and therefore takes out all the fluff or the cost that today is built in to charges that not just doctors, but hospitals, any medical provider charges because they're factoring in some of their overhead, they're factoring in what their reimbursement percentage is, and so therefore they inflate even their charges and their prices so that they can get, at the end, a net reimbursement that at least allows them to survive as a business, right?
Absolutely. So for a consumer out there, can you give an example of what that might look like?
So today, this is the beautiful part about OHM. Okay. You know, I mean, you're talking about creating a platform to make access and price transparency possible and easy. Today, I can call three or four providers. Let's just say imaging. Okay. That's an easy one.
So if I'm going to do an X-ray, for example.
An X-ray or even better, you know, and I've used this example because I've done this actually for my daughter. She needed an MRI of the knee, no contrast. Me coming from the healthcare business, I know what that is. I call a small hospital. I call an imaging center. And then I call another imaging center that a primary care physician friend of mine recommended.
Okay.
Right? And this is across, this is Orange County and LA County in Long Beach where I did this. And I just picked up the phone.
Yeah.
And in doing that, I got price ranges as low as $279 for an MRI of the knee with no contrast. The smaller hospital was charging $450. And all I did was I picked up the phone, I talked to the person in the imaging department who was responsible, and I said, what's your cash rate? Because I'm not using insurance today.
Right.
That was all I said. I didn't go into any details. I didn't talk about my employer. I just said, I'm not using insurance. What's your cash rate? Do you have prices for cash? And they said, hold on a minute. Yes, we do.
Yep.
And they came back with these prices. So me being the industrious, educated, or healthcare literate, I'll say, person that I am, I had the wherewithal to be able to call around and do that for one procedure.
Right.
Now, I can also go online. There's a website. There's a couple of websites that do this, but one that I like is called guru.com.
Guru.com.
That's G-U-R-O-O.
Okay.
Okay. Not the, you know.
G-U-R-U. With
the,
yeah,
that's right. And that is pulled together by some not-for-profit. It tells you on the site, but the not-for-profit pulls together claims data from multiple payers across the United States, which they all contributed over a period of about 5 years, and it's like 15 million claims. I mean, it's a lot. It's a pretty good sample. And they tell you what the average price is on a, I'll say, an insurance rate.
Yeah.
For lack of a better way to put it.
Okay.
So what I did was I went to Guru, you know, after receiving all these price quotes to see what it would be if I went through insurance on average in Los Angeles, because they can break it down by region.
Right.
And it was around $900 for an MRI of the knee with no contrast.
And is that what the insurance company pays, or is that your part? Your
That's what the insurance company. So that's the allowable amount. So that's the reimbursement. So now going back to the doctor side of the equation, right, or the imaging center side of the equation. If I walked in and I didn't do the cash thing, and I had Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, Cigna, if I had any insurance, they would then file a claim and go through that process. And they would charge whatever they charge, but they'd be reimbursed on average $900.
And if you had a deductible or copay, you might end up...
Me as a consumer, if I had a deductible or if I had a copay, then I'd pay a portion of that $900. Yeah. If I had a high deductible health plan that I hadn't met yet, I'd have to pay the whole $900. Yep. You hit it on the head.
Yes,
and
sir.
So as a consumer that is on a high deductible plan, which more and more consumers are moving towards now, right? This is something that was accelerated, I think, by Obamacare, by the way, because the premiums on these high deductible plans are really low.
Right.
Right?
Comparatively speaking.
Comparatively speaking. Yep. That's right. Now, overall costs, we can argue about what the overall cost ultimately is looking at it annually. But if you're a consumer, a regular old person, it's just like buying auto insurance or something like that. You know, you want to pay the lowest monthly amount you can because that's what you feel today.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have to, because you feel like you need some kind of insurance in case of an emergency.
Yeah.
Right? You may never actually use it or tap into it. The difference between auto insurance and health insurance is that health insurance is so much more expensive. And the bill, at the end of the day, if you do get an emergency, could be really, really high, much higher than crashing your car. So, if you're out of pocket because you have a high deductible health plan and you have a choice between like doing what I did, calling around and paying $279 for an MRI of the knee out of pocket, or paying a portion of or the whole of $900, I think in either case, you might choose the $279 deal.
Absolutely.
The issue is that there is no system for that today. It takes for me or any of you to be literate first enough to know that you can do this. And then two, to have the industriousness to pick up the phone, make a bunch of phone calls, ask the right questions, and get at what it is.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Not at all, man. I did the same second child, paid cash for the birth instead of going through insurance because it was actually cheaper.
There you go.
For the copay and the high deductible plan. So I know what you mean. But like you said, I'm health literate. We both work in healthcare.
Yeah.
Not very many people will know to do that.
Nope.
Where is OHM Healthcare today?
We are launching a pilot in LA and Orange County very shortly here. And we now have a network of providers. Predominantly, they are Providence Health and Services providers, which is, as you know or may not know, Providence recently merged with St. Joe's Health. St. Joe's Health, prior to partnering with Providence, merged with Hoag. And so you kind of have this conglomerate of what used to be three separate health systems, now one big one.
Right.
They also acquired and or affiliated themselves with medical groups like Facey Medical Group, Heritage Health Network, and then, of course, there's their own medical foundation. So you have these providers that, although they represent Providence St. Joe's Health Network, they are roughly about 6,000 providers. And I'm not talking about their medical facilities. I'm talking just the doctors across the entire region. So 6,000 providers. Orange County, with the Hoag St. Joe's combo, puts them at just about 90% saturation, which means 90% of the providers in that market are theirs.
Yeah.
So when we launch, which, like I said, is going to be, you know, really soon here, any consumer that opens up our app to access our platform when looking for medical providers will see pretty much the bulk of the medical providers in their area.
Nice. How do people access this app?
It'll be available through either the App Store. It's what we call a responsive web application, which means that it's compatible no matter whether you have an Apple or an Android.
Okay.
You can access it through your computer, again, you know, as you know, a tablet or something like that. And so it's easily accessible, basically, is the point. And once you sign in, you know, there's a whole setup there, because the idea is not just to give the consumer access. That's easy, right? To give you access, you can search and find things. It's also to create transparency, so there'll be pricing for some of the most common procedures and things, all the way down to a basic first-time office visit.
Okay.
And so that's great because healthcare is still the only industry where you can buy something without knowing what it costs first. We're trying to change that.
Nice, man.
But more important than that, we're trying to create an environment where the consumer has, I'll say, control of their own healthcare universe. And so initially in the pilot, you know, you'll be able to do some of those basic things I just described. Schedule an appointment, go see a doctor, have a payment method in there, either sponsored through your employer, if your employer is a part of this.
Yeah.
Or if you're a gig worker or a 1099er, as I like to call.
Yeah.
You know, you can put in your own payment method. So that's the simple parts. The more complex parts that will make this useful is, one, the idea that you can create your own network.
Yeah.
I call it personal provider network. So in the absence of an in-network, out-of-network dictated by an insurer where, you know, you pay more if you go out-of-network, that kind of thing, or if you're an HMO, you can't even go out-of-network, right? In this environment, since it's open market and it represents doctors that are across various health systems and things like that, well, that means that you, using social networking technology, can say, this OBGYN, I want to add them to my favorites. I want to make them my regular doctor. This dermatologist will become our family dermatologist. And you can continue doing that. Before you know it, you've got your preferred medical providers in your app, in your hand, that you frequent often. And even better, you can start to provide permission so that those preferred medical providers not only can see you and your medical records and your medical history so they can provide better care to you, but they can also see each other.
Yeah.
And start to coordinate care around you.
Okay.
This is cool because today's environment is siloed. If I'm a part of a medical group and we're all in the same EHR.
Electronic health record.
Electronic health record. And you, consumer, patient, are seeing doctors outside of our network. I can't generally communicate with them about you, right? Because they're not in our network.
Right.
That's the reason why the whole in-network, out-of-network thing is important for the insurers, because they can control all your data in one place and your care and other things. Well, in a free market, or in, I'll say, a market where consumers have better access, the silos could be a problem. But with OHM, we blow all that up.
Yeah.
Right? So it doesn't stay with the provider or this insurer, or if you leave jobs and now you lose everything, you have to start from scratch. No, your healthcare universe moves with you.
So is the vision for people to still have insurance and also use OHM, or where do you see that?
Yeah. Sorry about that. You did ask that question earlier.
No worries.
So insurance is still important.
Okay.
In the way that all insurance is important. Your homeowner's insurance, your life insurance, your auto insurance, they're there for unforeseen catastrophic events. Health insurance is the only insurance that we pay for where it's permeated every single little mundane thing in our lives. What we want to do is relegate health insurance to the same position as all the other insurances, which is where it belongs, for emergencies, for catastrophic events. If your, you know, homeowner's insurance policy dictated to you, you know, what kind of appliances you could put in your own home that you own, right? If your auto insurance policy dictated to you which tires you can put on your car or which mechanics you can go visit, right, for a tune-up, that would be ridiculous. Not only would it be ridiculous, it would probably cost a lot more. Why? Because they're a middleman for every little thing now. That's what happened to our healthcare insurance. So, yes, you need insurance. You need it for emergencies because you can't predict when things like that will happen. That's why insurance exists. That's how it should be.
Cool. Are there any competitors to OHM?
There are no direct competitors to OHM, primarily because, you know, our combination of a cash-based provider network or direct pay provider network, plus the platform, plus any kind of benefit design, which changes depending on the employer. I won't get into that. That together is unique, you know, and I'll say this because this is kind of, it's not secret sauce, but it's truth. Is that today there are no other cash-based provider networks in the United States of America. There are cash-based providers.
Yeah.
Market by market, they're independent. Like I said, you could call around and ask a provider for a cash price. There is no organized system around it, though.
Got it, okay.
And so that's what we're doing.
Okay, So other countries, I'm curious, have you seen anything like this in other countries? Are you aware if anything like this exists in the world?
Not as far as the leverage, you know, as far as an actual like product. In other countries, in South America, in India, in Singapore and other Asian countries, they are predominantly on a cash book of business, on a direct pay book of business with their doctors and the hospitals. And so that's not new. I think here in America, this is probably one of the few places where the health insurance business is the way it is. Even in other developed Western countries where they're not cash, they're on a universal payment system like Canada and, you know, the UK and things like that. All of them are able to keep their costs lower than us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So whether you go to the one extreme where it's universal, you know, coverage, or to the opposite extreme where it's mostly cash in some developing country, somehow, some way, and this is separate or not correlated with quality in most cases, right? You can't look at them and say, well, they're cheaper, but their quality sucks. No. In many cases, their quality is better.
Yeah.
And at least on par.
Okay.
Yet, we still hold the record, right?
Yeah.
For the highest cost of care. And so, yeah, we're unique, which is what makes, I would say, the U.S. healthcare system ripe for disruption.
Okay, cool. Well, as we close up, I have one final question for you, Gary, and this goes hand in hand with the changing climate of healthcare. In the next 5 to 10 years, if you had a crystal ball, where do you see OHM healthcare and where do you see American healthcare?
Wow. Okay.
5 to 10 years. Where are you guys? Yeah.
You know how startups work, though, right? I mean, I'm building a business to last, but you know, startups are like they're like the little turtles that pop out of the sand in Florida and run for the beach, the sea turtles.
All right.
And you know, there's like thousands of them going, but most of them get plucked off by seagulls.
Okay.
Right. And so the question is, how far can we run? How fast and how far can we run before we get plucked up by? It won't be seagulls. It'll be some major corporation, maybe a payer, maybe Amazon, maybe Google. I don't know, right?
Okay.
But assuming that doesn't happen, I see OHM almost like this is like a Moneyball thing, right? This is who can Moneyball it? Who can Moneyball healthcare, right? I see us being able to take 5 years from now, you'll see medium to small employers that aren't as big as Amazon and Morgan and, you know, those guys that are coming together to ostensibly disrupt healthcare.
Okay.
But those are really, really big employers with millions of employees. But the little guys need some kind of turnkey method to do what the big guys can do, right? And so for that reason, and they make up the majority of employers, by the way, the little guys, the medium and small guys. So I see us 5 years from now being the enabling technology and platform and business for thousands of companies around the United States across major metro areas where we have, just like people use Uber as kind of like the word to describe Uberification, to describe what they do, even though you don't have to be Uber to say I'm the Uber of or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I see in 5 years that people will say, you know, they're the OHM, they're their OHM healthcare of X.
Okay.
Right. And so that's where I see OHM in 5 years. Sorry for the long answer.
No worries. So that means, I mean, I'm guessing goes hand in hand with American healthcare, the pricing transparency, the access.
Yeah. Since we're ahead even of the Amazons of the world, because it's gonna take them a while to figure some things out because they're so big and they've got bureaucracy going on. But while they're figuring it out, we will have already commercialized this method of doing business in healthcare. Right.
Nice.
And so, 5 years from now, this will be old news.
Awesome.
Right? Yeah.
Awesome, Gary. Well, Gary and I have been talking for a few months now, and it's good to finally be face-to-face. It's funny, one of Gary's work sites where he does some of his work is literally a walk away from where we're recording. He's in the same plaza, totally small world. So he walked over today for the show, which is great. Gary Frazier has been our guest. Gary's the founder of OHM Healthcare, which is a startup that's going to make some waves. And I encourage you folks to check out the website, Gary, the website where people can learn more.
It's www.ohmhealthcare.com.
Very good. And Gary, folks listening are mostly healthcare professionals. If they had questions for you, how can folks reach out to you?
Well, one way, there's an email, an info@ohmhealthcare.com on our website. So you can obviously email that, and all of those eventually make their way to me.
All right. Awesome, Gary. Well, I look forward to seeing the success. Thanks for sharing about the partnership with Providence here in Los Angeles and Orange County. Look forward to much success. Folks, if you like today's show, feel free to check us out on iTunes or Stitcher by searching Pop Health Podcast. Please leave a review, give us some feedback, and feel free to like the show as well. Thanks, everybody. Take care.